Welcome to this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane.
And I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host, as always, is psychologist, author, and my dad, and grandpa to two grandkids now.
How about that?
Very proud.
Dr. James Dobson, Dad and Luann, there is a well-known quote that says, adversity introduces a man to himself. And that lends itself to the conversation we have planned today.
Well, it does, Ryan, and it's true that trials can reveal much about our character. God's Word also says that hard times make us into a stronger person and bring us closer to God. Romans 5, 3, and 4 says, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. Today, I've invited a couple to join us in the studio who have endured a staggering difficulty in the last year. And I will tell you, I've been so impressed by the enduring nature of their faith that I wanted them to come as our guests today to these microphones and share about their experiences in the hope that it will bring encouragement and fortitude to others who are going through trials in their own lives and families.
This is an amazing story, Doctor. Listeners will want to hang on tight.
Well, John and Donna Ramstead are the friends to whom I'm referring. They live just up the road from us in Denver, Colorado. John is a principal at Financial Designs Limited. He also served our country as a U.S. Navy F-14 pilot and flew combat sorties or armed attacks in Desert Storm. He's been married to his wife, Donna, for 22 years, and she's here with us today because she's very much a part of this story. Donna is a stay-at-home homeschooling mother, my kind of lady, and their three boys, John, Michael, and Matthew. John and Donna, my friends, I admire you more than anybody I know, and I mean that, and welcome to Family Talk.
Thank you, Doctor. We're humbled to be here.
Well, we've been talking about you being here for a long time, but you had medical problems that we're going to describe, and this is really the first time you've been able to be here, and so it's such a pleasure. Now, to give our listeners the context for today's program, I want to remind those who don't know that on September 10th, 2011, I was at a ranch in Montana, and I foolishly fell off a horse and broke my clavicle and my scapula and generally scrambled my right shoulder. And it's a long story that I won't go into again, but something else occurred on that ranch trip. John Ramstead, that I just introduced you to, was one of the guests. And the day before I fell, on September 9th, 2011, John had a far more serious fall from a horse, and the consequences of it were catastrophic. And go back and tell us what you remember of the moments before you fell.
I remember being at the corral gate, and you and I were the first two saddled, and we were sitting there chatting. And your horse, you took your horse off to go run like you're apt to do, and my horse wanted to follow. So my horse started following it on it was trotting, and then just all of a sudden it took about a 90-degree turn to the right and then just took off like a horse coming out of the gates at the Preakness so fast that every step it was accelerating. I just remember I was being thrown backwards. He was accelerating so fast, which really surprised me. So I wrapped my legs around him, and then I got my torso back forward. And then I'm looking, and we're heading straight at a corral fence, which I remember trying to kick him in the left flank because it was open off to the left, and there was pens to the right of that big circular enclosure, and trying to rein him to the left. And he wouldn't. He kept going straight. And faster and faster and faster. The last memory that I have was maybe 10 yards away from that fence line because we're, you know, perpendicular to the fence line. I remember clearly thinking, this is not going to end well. And that's the last memory I have until I woke up laying on the ground.
Well, he did run right into that fence and through you.
What people told me that actually saw it is that I was leaning to the left and trying to rein him to the left, and he dropped his back end all the way down and pivoted 180 on his front feet, and he fell down and slid rump first into the fence. When he did that, he launched me, and I went straight into the fence, and the top bar of the fence hit me across my upper part of my lip through my cheekbone and my eyebrow and crushed the left side of my skull. I lost the vision in my left eye.
So you're blind in that eye today?
I'm blind in my left eye. I had one doctor say that there was over 27 fractures in my skull. The sphenoid bone in the middle, the base of the skull was fractured in multiple places. There was fractures in the cervical vertebra. The second bar down actually hit me in the chest, and it broke four ribs. I mean, cracked them all the way through and punctured my left lung. And
the teeth.
And I lost, I'm going to end up having between 7 and 9 teeth replaced or worked on as part of this. There are two that we're watching. Hopefully they don't have to do any work on because I've logged enough hours in the dental chair and we're not done yet.
Mm. You were in the hospital for how long?
I was in ICU for 3 weeks and then another week in the neuro-ortho rehab floor. So I was up there just over a month up in Montana at the hospital in Great Falls.
Mm-hmm. I was behind you, John, and I saw it all happen. My horse saw it too. And I tried to come to your aid. I tried to get my horse to go over beside you. And he was spooked because your horse was on the ground and he would not move. And he was going backwards. And there you were on the ground. I didn't know whether you were alive or not. And just were so shocked. And I finally got up to you. And by that time, Steve Ryder, mm-hmm. our chief engineer, was there and others got to you. And you were completely out of it. We tried to keep you down and we couldn't. And you got up and you were just bathed in blood. And of course, your eye was terribly damaged. And mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen an accident happen quite like that before. And you told me this morning that you don't remember much of what happened for the next how long?
Well, the next thing I remember, I remember clearly thinking this is not going to end well. And I remember waking up on the ground and the pain I felt was absolutely overwhelming. I could not deal with it. I was absolutely in just panic mode. It just, matter of fact, to think about that first part of the moment, just I can feel my heart start racing again. I felt somebody holding my shoulders down. I could feel somebody, it felt like holding my hips down. Somebody was holding my head. That was Steve Bray, who was there, right? Mm-hmm. Steve was holding my head, and I could tell a woman was holding my right hand. I assumed that was Lonnie, who was the ranch manager's wife, who's a trained EMT. I think it was good that she was right there because I guess when I stood up, she had everybody kind of lock me in and lower me down, and as soon as they lowered me down, I passed out. Mm-hmm. And I had two different doctors look at the damage in the back of the neck and skull and could not believe I wasn't a quadriplegic. So I just credit, you know, the people at the accident and God's hand, the fact that I'm even able to walk today. And I was laying on the ground and I was struggling against the people pushing on me. I didn't know how to deal with the pain. And then I heard Lonnie say, he's going into shock. And I could hear Steve Bray behind my head. I think he was praying.
He was.
And then I tell you what, it was an experience I will never forget my whole life. The Spirit of the Lord came over me in such a powerful way, Doctor. He put his hand on me. And the unconditional love that I felt is just makes me tear up right now. The peace that I felt was it. All the pain got taken away. All the fear, the anxiety was taken away. He spoke into me, all things work together for good for those that love the Lord. I heard him say that. And then he didn't say with words, but he said, I'm going to heal you and I'm going to use this for my glory. Then the next verse that came into my mind was, the Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And I knew laying there on the ground that my left eye was permanently blind. And I was sharing this later with a friend of ours, Barry McGuire, and he says, you know what? God blinded you so that you can see. What I did next, Lonnie had just said he's going into shock. My heart rate was racing. My respiration was racing. And all of a sudden, what they saw was my body relaxed. My heart rate went down to 65. And I guess what I said to them is, God's here. He told me it's going to be okay. You don't have to worry. And she had never, ever in her life as an EMT seen anybody who was going into shock just relax like that. And I guess, according to Steve, I spent the next hour waiting for the helicopter chatting with you guys. I don't remember any of this, of course.
Yeah, we called for the flight for life and got you in the helicopter and off you went. So
I do remember being loaded in the helicopter because I was thinking, cool, helicopter ride. And you know, I remember thinking, I'm looking up out of the helicopter. I only can see straight up. Like, well, I get a helicopter ride. I don't get to see anything. And it was funny because then after I get to the hospital, I remember being taken out of the helicopter, but then that's where my memories end. The whole next basically 2 months of my life, I have little snapshots of memory. I remember Donna being in the room in a couple occasions. My parents were there for a week. I only remember one or two little memories of them. It was interesting because in the hospital, if you look at the hospital, I was consistently describing my pain for that whole month as between a 7 and a 10 constantly. And God has just shielded me from some of the recollections of that, even though, you know, there's times I remember just the day was very difficult. But, you know, it's just because of the nature of the brain injury, that's what really was the worst part about it that's going to take a long time to recover from. Is it's classified as what's called a severe brain injury.
You haven't completely recovered from it yet, have you?
No, it's going to be what they're telling me at Craig Hospital where I'm at now. It could be another 18 to 24 months until what they call is the new normal. And the biggest question is, and you know, and that's something I struggle with today, you know, because this is a real walk of faith, is my new normal going to be 100%? Can I do what I used to do? You know, if I could handle, let's say, you know, 10 cases at a time, now can I handle 10? Or is it 8? Or is it 6? Or is it 2? Or is it, can I even be effective? Yeah. Do I need to walk down a different path?
And how surreal that whole experience was. Donna, you received a phone call, and you don't need to identify who called you, but he didn't quite give you the whole story. What were you told?
Well, I don't know if he didn't realize the extent of John's injuries at the time, or whether he was trying to let me down gently, but he told me that John had been thrown off a horse. And he had a big gash over his eye that was bleeding quite a bit. I think he told me that he had been unconscious for a few minutes and that his teeth were broken. So
and that was it.
That was about it. So
you weren't feeling too bad about this, were you?
Well, I was thinking you'd be taken to the hospital, stitched up, and let go that night. Mm-hmm. So then when I got the call, I think I was trying to call your cell phone, John's cell phone, and you answered the phone, Dr. Dobson, and I said, so when are they going to let him out? And you said, you don't understand.
You know, I was really concerned that I tell you the truth so you'd know what John had experienced, but I didn't want it to be overwhelming. But I did try to tell you that it's more than getting bucked off a horse.
Right. You know, I appreciate that. And maybe it was a good thing to have the initial shock be small and then kind of be let down in increments, I guess. But I just felt like I needed to do what I could do to get him to Denver for the best care. And then when I realized that I couldn't get him back to Denver, I wanted to do whatever we could to get up to Montana. And we had a really good friend that helped us make that happen. He donated his jet to fly the boys and I up there. So
she was next to me 24/7, except for some trying to run over and get some sleep for 6 weeks.
Oh, goodness.
I can't imagine how hard that was. And so I'm sure it just wore on her. And I got to tell you, without the, you know, God talks in the Bible that he, you know, he's going to provide, right? You know, we had a friend of ours fly the family up. We had 60, 70 families come bring us meals. We had thousands and thousands of people praying for us. And the people that came around us and the sense of community and Christian family was so powerful. It's what kept us going. I'm sure it's what kept Donna going. Mm. To just see that support. She knew, even though she was struggling day to day with what was going on with me, that there was that you know, somebody's got her back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to know that, right? What you can do, you know, as people ask you all the time, what can I do for you? I think, you know what, the people that really stand out to us are people that just, you know, came over and said hi. People that came over and brought us a meal. Somebody that just called and said something specific. Can I drive John today? I know you need a break. You know what? And I think that meant so much to Don. I think mm-hmm. when somebody really doesn't know how they're going to get through the day, it's yeah. maybe that one phone call, that one act of kindness that was like, okay, I can get through
courage.
The morning. Mm-hmm. And we had that every day. We had something like that happen.
Don, on the other side of that coin, physicians and hospitals are required legally now to give you the bad news.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really fully understood that. You're going in for surgery the next morning, and they come in and tell mm-hmm. you, well, now this can take mm-hmm. your life. You know, you may not wake up, and
right.
that's not the time that you need to hear all the possible negative mm-hmm. things. But they have to tell you.
Right.
And since they couldn't tell all that to John, they probably told it to you.
Right.
You were hearing
all, the papers.
All those mm-hmm. terrible things
right.
that could happen. Did you ever despair along the way?
Oh, sure. There are, you know, many moments of despair. I would go, you know, be with John all day and try to hold it together. But then I would go back to the hotel at night and cry and pray and definitely. But I, you know, God was faithful to send people to me for encouragement over and over again, strangers. And in the first surgery, we had family and friends with us to get through. The second surgery was unexpected, and I was by myself. And I'm sitting there in the waiting room by myself, and I had my Bible with me, and our case manager had called. So I had just gotten off the phone with her. And a man came up to me and he said, I wasn't eavesdropping on your conversation, but someone asked me to come and visit you, and I think you're the person I'm looking for. And they had told him about our situation. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't know where to find me. Then God sent him to where I was, and he got me through the second surgery and kept my mind on spiritual things rather than on what could be happening in the operating room. And just lots of instances like that over and over again where people were angels and mm-hmm. earthly angels yeah. were sent to me to keep me going through all of this, definitely.
And you had three boys that you needed to keep buoyant too.
Right, yeah. right.
And so you had to be strong for them.
Definitely,
you didn't want them
yeah.
to see you crying and despairing.
Right.
That took a lot of guts, too.
Yeah,
well, it was
did.
Really hard to be away from them, too. I was in Montana, and they were here with friends in Denver, with friends of ours that yeah. generously cared for them in their home for over 3 weeks. And so it was definitely hard to be going through that and then not be able to see them for such a long time.
You know, Donna, what you just said in describing the folks that the Lord sent to be with you. 21 years ago when I had a heart attack, it took the doctors a full week, actually 10 days, to figure out what was going on with my heart. Well, the last day that I was there at that hospital, I went in for a treadmill test and what's called a nuclear study mm-hmm. so they could really see what was taking place with my heart. I'd already had an angiogram. And I got on that treadmill and I was about 2-3 minutes in and they stopped it. And that's a bad sign
mm-hmm.
because they saw something. And they made it clear to me that something was seriously wrong with my heart. I tried to call Shirley and I couldn't reach her. And I tried to call my cardiologist and I couldn't find him. And I was by myself there contemplating not living, not surviving this. And I just uttered a little prayer and I said, Lord, I am just flat out lonely. Would you send somebody to me at this time? Mm-hmm. And about 5-10 minutes later, Dr. Jack Hayford, a minister mm-hmm. from Church on the Way in Southern California, walked through my doors and he sat down and read scriptures to me and encouraged me. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jack, I have to ask you a question. You drove all the way across Los Angeles to be here today. Why did you do that? Why did you come? You're a busy man. Why did you come? And he said, because the Lord told me you were lonely.
Wow.
Can you believe that? And there are moments like that where you're shocked to find out the Lord is listening when you pray those little arrow prayers. Mm-hmm. He's paying attention. Mm-hmm. He heard me.
Right.
And he cared about me, and he sent his representative to walk over to my bedside and sit down mm-hmm. and share good news with me.
Right.
So, you know, that's got to be encouraging to people who are despairing now when those moments come when you just say, like you did, John, we talked about it yesterday, this is not going to end well. As everybody
well, I called
said
it right.
That, you were right about that. But the end is not yet.
Mm. That's right.
And, Doctor, what a great reminder to someone listening today whose heart has been pricked that they should go see someone, that this might be the confirmation mm-hmm. from the Lord that you need to follow through. You might just be that word of encouragement that both you, Donna, and you, Doctor, received. We're called to reach out to these people. And if you're listening to the Lord, you might be that voice of encouragement
for
someone
today.
You know
when he's giving you a little nudge.
Yeah.
Now, I can't believe how short this program really is. And we've only gotten started. But this was the beginning of God's blessing on you through all of the pain, all of the surgeries. But the Lord was there in the midst of all that, as people will see next time. And we're going to go right on because we got to get you home mm-hmm. and make sure we don't wear you out because I'm just amazed that you can even be here. And, John, we've been praying for you. I talked to you numerous times on the phone. You probably don't remember them.
I remember one time.
Do you?
You know, I got to tell you, too, is in there's few memories I have in the hospital room, but you were in the hospital, and Shirley, your wife, came in to the room. And I just remember her asking if she could pray. And I don't remember what she said, but I could absolutely just feel the presence of the Lord come into that room, just like when I was in my accident scene. When she prayed the most powerful, heartfelt, wonderful prayer that just totally lifted me up and gave me life that day. Because the day that she came in to pray for me was, I think, because right when I started to just drop off the cliff, and I was really struggling with this whole thing, and she made my day that day. Your wife, Shirley, is an amazing lady.
I was down in the emergency unit at that time, as I recall, and Shirley left to go find you and came back and told me she had just seen you and had prayed with you. And so you're in
I remember
one,
that. That's one of my
part
few
of the
memories.
Hospital,
is Shirley
and I'm in the other, both falling off horses. So anyway, we've got to go for today. But we will continue this conversation tomorrow because there is something here for everybody in your story. We all go through times like this. It is life. And the way you handled it, and Donna, the way you handled it, are a testimony. Yeah. To everybody, and we want to share that with our listeners. So sit tight. We're going to talk some more. Mm.
And, Doctor, I believe there's a little bit of a love story here, because when we first started, within the first 10 seconds, these two reached over and held each other's hand. So we are in for a treat tomorrow.
And, in fact, right before we went on the air, John, you said to Donna, you want to do this program sitting on my lap.
That's right.
That's the beauty of your directional mic.
Thank you, guys, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Doctor.
And we are already looking forward to hearing more of this story from John and Donna Ramstead tomorrow.
And if you can't be with us on your local Christian station, you can download the podcast or request a CD copy of the program at drjamesdobson.org. Or if you'd prefer to call, our number is 877-732-6825.
Or even before we close, if you are in the middle of a difficult time, Family Talk really wants to be there for you. We would love to talk with you, pray with you, even offer you a copy of Dr. James Dobson's book, When God Doesn't Make Sense. So again, connect with us at drjamesdobson.org or our phone number one last time, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for listening, and we invite you all to be with us again tomorrow for more with John and Donna Ramstead. We'll see you then.